Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. A Kumeyaay Land Trust has filed an eviction notice against the County Fire Authority, claiming that the county's takeover of a fire station in Julian violates a deed and means the land should revert to Native Americans. Firefighters battling a blaze that jumped the border last week got help from technology, and we'll have details. Former El Cajon Councilman Ben Colasso and his wife Jessica have been arraigned on contempt of court charges that could result in time behind bars. On Green Scene, we'll have the latest on the proposed Cottonwood sand mine and on El Cajon's newly adopted climate action plan. Hear about a new heart team at the Sheriff's Department aimed at helping the homeless. Then, hear about some local Alpine students' big win in a national solar sprint competition. Dog owners, listen up. There's a warning from the FDA about xylitol, a sweetener that's killing dogs. Our newsmaker interview today is with Krista Powers from the Mount Helix Park Foundation. She'll be sharing some fascinating facts about the Mount Helix Park and a preview of this year's Heart of Mount Helix event coming up. On part two of today's show, hear about immigration sweeps in San Diego County. And then on our Capitol Report, we'll have clips from the House of Representatives, which for the first time in over 100 years has condemned the actions of a president, binding Trump's tweets telling congressional women of color to go back where they came from to be racist. From Public News Service, we'll have some national news headlines on reactions to that action, as well as new research findings on survivors of gun violence and some latest climate change news. Plus, back to local news, we'll have a weather report on a monsoonal moisture pattern moving across our region, bringing thunderstorms and possible flash flooding. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is the East County Magazine Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine's Tribal Beat. A fierce battle over the future of fire protection in Julian just got even hotter. San Diego County's Fire Authority recently took over the Julian-Cuyamaca Fire Protection District, the last all-volunteer firefighting district in our region amid a firestorm of controversy. And now, the county may lose access to the newly built Fire Station 56, that's just south of Julian on Highway 79, to a group of Native Americans. An attorney for the Kumeyaay Native American Land Conservancy has filed an eviction notice seeking to force the County Fire Authority, run by CAL FIRE, to get out of the station within 2 weeks and turn it back over to the Indian group. It's just the latest twist in a long and complex fight over who should provide fire protection for the mountain communities. The Julian Volunteer Firefighting Department was forced to dissolve and transfer firefighting duties to the county after both a Local Agency Formation Commission, or LAFCO, and a slim majority of the district's voters approved the change. But many Julian-area residents are fighting to reverse that action through pending litigation, arguing that replacing 65 volunteer firefighters with just one CAL FIRE crew at a time does not provide adequate protection. However, the LAFCO action and the ballot measure both failed to take into account a potential land claim by the Kumeyaay, which the group is now asking a court to enforce. It all started when Julian resident Francis Mosler deeded the land on which the fire station now sits to the Native Americans for preservation before she passed away. The deed required that the Julian-Cuyamaca Fire Protection District build and operate a fire station on a portion of the land, and that the land should revert back to the Kumeyaay Degeno group if the Volunteer Firefighting District should ever cease to operate a fire station on the site. John Eaglespear Elliott told county supervisors at a hearing in 2018, early in the process, by dissolving itself as a district, the property where the fire station was eventually constructed automatically reverts to the Kumeyaay Degeno Land Conservancy for its use consistent with the underlying deed. Supervisor Diane Jacob promised at the time that staff would look into the issue and work with Elliott. But Elliott says the conservancy was never approached by the county, LAFCO, or the Julian Volunteer Firefighters District. Now, A letter sent to the county on behalf of the Native Americans says the group has invoked its power of termination because the Volunteer Fire Protection District has abandoned the property. The Conservancy considers the county fire authority's possession unlawful and wants the county evicted. But the county says it has no intention of vacating the fire station. A letter from Joshua Heinlein, senior deputy county counsel, sent to the Conservancy's attorney, argues that the Conservancy is wrong in stating that the Julian Cuyamaca Fire Protection District permanently abandoned the fire station on May 31st. Now, May 31st was when the San Diego Superior Court Judge Randa Trapp ordered the volunteers who had been occupying the fire station to leave the premises. The volunteers had argued that the election was illegal due to violations of the state's open government law, which occurred before the election. They claim this should nullify the election and return control of the fire station to Julian's volunteer firefighters. The Julian volunteer's attorney, Corey Briggs, immediately filed an appeal, which by law should have triggered an automatic stay to halt Judge Trapp's order. This should have allowed the volunteers to stay in the station until their appeal was heard. And yet the next day, June 1st, the county fire authority, with backing of the sheriff, seized the fire station, changed all the locks, and took the keys to the fire trucks in apparent defiance of the law. Now, the county's letter to the Kumeyaay's Conservancy Group notes that a restraining order is in effect, which prevents Julian volunteers from using the fire station pending a decision by the appellate court. The county and the Julian Volunteer District are currently engaged in litigation regarding which of these entities has the legal right to provide fire protection services to Julian and the surrounding areas. The county's letter states, adding, once the litigation is resolved, the fire station will resume providing fire service to Julian and the surrounding areas. The letter warns that if the Indians Land Conservancy files a lawsuit, the county fire authority will vigorously assert its legal right to own and possess the property and continue its use as a fire station. Just what the Kumeyaay hope to do with the land if they are successful in reclaiming it is unclear. Perhaps the tribe aims to leverage the acquisition to form a new tribal-owned fire district to protect the mountain communities, or work to restore the right of the volunteers to run the station. Or the fire station could be torn down and the land returned to its natural state as part of a broader preserve on land donated by Mrs. Mosler. Reporting from Julian, for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
A brush fire that charred over 650 acres in Mexico jumped across the international border, causing some nervous moments for residents in San Diego's southeast county. The fire crossed the border near the Barrett Truck Trail south of Del Zura. Fortunately, CAL FIRE reported that the border fire was contained after burning approximately 100 acres in the United States. Firefighters got help from new infrared technology used to monitor the brush fire from the air after dark. CAL FIRE posted the video on its Twitter feed stating, "The intel gathered is a huge asset for fire operations." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
Former El Cajon Councilman Ben Colasso and his wife Jessica were arraigned in court on July 12th on 7 counts of contempt of court each. The Colassos are charged with failing to provide documents despite subpoenas and with actively interfering in the judicial process. The charges stem from a sexual harassment and fraud lawsuit filed over 2 years ago. In March, Colasso resigned from the El Cajon City Council and announced that he had settled the civil suit over fraud, defamation, and harassment claims, which were filed by a taco shop owner and by Jala Tafik and Paris Cargar, two contestants in a beauty pageant run by the Colassos. However, that settlement did not include Lena Chari, an attorney whose fraud and defamation suit against the Colassos remains pending. The orders to show cause for contempt for both Colassos were submitted by Chari's attorney, although Chari represented herself at the hearing. The Colassos pleaded not guilty before Judge Kenneth Medell. The punishment for a contempt of court charge can range from jail time until defendants comply with the orders to up to 5 years in prison. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. The County of San Diego has released its scoping letter detailing concerns over a proposed sand mine operation at Cottonwood Golf Course. A scoping letter provides a list of reports, studies, and other documents which a developer applicant must consider for approval. county's concerns underscore those voiced by community members and the Stop Cottonwood Sand Mine Committee. The developer wants to mine sand along Sweetwater River in the middle of a residential neighborhood with homes, schools, and businesses. Concerns include traffic, safety, noise, air pollution, health hazards, reduced property values, visual blight on county scenic roads, and negative impacts on the environment, including on the adjacent Sweetwater National Wildlife Refuge, as well as state and county preserves nearby. The project would require approval of state and federal wildlife protection agencies, a process that can take years to complete, the county's letter states. The county also raises concerns over impacts on community character and consistency with the county general plan, as well as the Valle de Oro community plan and the Rancho San Diego specific plan. The Cottonwood Sand Mine is proposed by New West Investment and investor Michael Schlesinger, who bought Cottonwood Golf Course in 2015 after the golf course filed for bankruptcy. The proposal is to mine millions of tons of sand and aggregate over 10 years in three phases, with reclamation planned after each. The Stop Cottonwood Sand Mine Committee submitted a petition with over 2,100 signatures from residents opposed to the plan. County staff received another 130 emails or letters from concerned residents. The Sweetwater Authority, a public water agency, also notified the county that the sand mine could significantly increase pollution of the Sweetwater Reservoir. Elizabeth Urquhart, chair of the Stop Cottonwood Sand Mine Committee, says, "The county has reiterated our significant concerns over the impact to the community, but," she adds, "this is a long process, and much more work is to be done to inform the community and to ultimately stop this sand mine." The group is planning a community meeting this fall to keep area residents informed and involved. John Cloud with EnviroMine, consultant for the developer, did not respond to our request for comments on the county's scoping letter. In the past, the developer has said that the sand mine is needed to meet local needs for sand used in road construction and other building projects.
This is John Fisteer with a Green Scene Report. By a unanimous vote, the El Cajon City Council has voted to approve a climate change policy developed in conjunction with community outreach sessions earlier this year. But some critics contend the plan does not go far enough to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. The plan includes 8 strategies intended to reduce pollution, improve community resiliency, and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. It would push the city to use 80% clean and renewable energy by 2030, helping to address climate change while also aiding the city in qualifying for grant funding. According to city planner Lorena Cordova, El Cajon can meet goals through 2020 without any further action. But by 2030, the city would need to act due to a gap of 33,000 metric tons between current efforts to curb greenhouse gas emissions and goals. Climate Action Campaign, a political action group, criticized the city for not embracing a goal of 100% clean and renewable energy by 2030. Its leader, Malika Marsden, told the council, "We think this climate action plan is failing community members because it's adopting half measures that don't really commit to fighting climate crisis and are not enforceable." In a news release sent after the City Council adopted the plan, Marsden elaborated that the city's plan fails to protect public health or clean the air, also failing to meet state law and address what she called a twin climate and housing crisis. State mandates seek to push cities to build new and affordable housing along transit corridors. But city council members repeatedly stated during the council meeting that the plan could be updated in the future. City manager Graham Mitchell expressed the last words after the plan was passed when he stated, "This is about adopt and adapt."
The San Diego Sheriff's Department has formed a homeless assistance resource team known as HEART. It's comprised of a team of deputies assigned full-time to this effort, working exclusively with county agencies and non-governmental organizations on homeless outreach and services to the homeless in unincorporated areas. The HEART team started as a pilot project on June 10th. Their activities include informing homeless people of medical and psychiatric wellness services, food and shelter options, help with identification and documentation, and accessing public benefits, according to a press release issued by the Sheriff's Department. A video sent to media shows deputies contacting a homeless man living in a makeshift encampment in a riverbed, hidden among towering reeds. Sergeant Kenny Lawrence with the HART team says deputies also helped the Department of Public Works to clean up some sites for health reasons, but outreach to those camped at the sites is also done a few days before any cleanup occurs. In the past, when cleanup of homeless camps occurred, belongings were often thrown away, though notice was always posted before a cleanup. Now, Sergeant Lawrence says, if no one is at the camp, a notice is posted advising where the property will be stored and how to retrieve it. We do not go in and take anyone's personal items for destruction, he adds. Homeless people are offered hotel vouchers and services. According to Sergeant Lawrence, the goal of all of our outreach operations is to get those in need into permanent housing. The hotels work as a way to bridge the gap from homelessness and permanent housing. It also helps our outreach partners know where the individual is so that the proper resources can be given to that individual. If a homeless person has a pet, such as a dog, Sergeant Lawrence says, we do everything we can to keep the two together. If that's not possible, Animal Services is contacted and the owner is advised how to retrieve their pet when they are able to do so. According to the annual point-in-time homeless count done in January, East County has 13% of the total homeless population in San Diego County. The count found over 1,000 homeless people in East County, of whom nearly half remain unsheltered, sleeping in parks, on sidewalks, in riverbed encampments, or in vehicles. The HART team aims to help these individuals, bringing hope to the homeless. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is John Fisteer with an education report. Engineering students from McQueen Middle School in Alpine have won second place in a national junior solar sprint competition held by the Technology Student Association in Washington, D.C., where 94 teams competed. Their solar-powered spring car recorded the fastest time during time trials. After 2 days of racing, they qualified for semifinals and then made it through double elimination brackets to earn the Racing Crown's second place award. It's the solar team's second time to place in the top three in the past 3 years. The four students in grades 6 through 8 designed and built a scale solar-powered sprint car in their engineering class, putting in over 100 hours of work using SolidWorks modeling, digital material cutting, CNC machining, and a 3D printer to fabricate components for their car and display. The winning team includes students Riley Hughes, Cameron Lyle, Liam Guerra, and Jose Duran. The school's engineering program is expanding this fall into a bigger space, which will house the first CO2-powered dragster racing track in Southern California. Alpine Union School District Superintendent Rich Newman says it's an exciting time to be in Alpine and attend Joan McQueen Middle School.
The Food and Drug Administration has issued warning for dog owners to beware of foods and medications containing xylitol after reports of numerous dog deaths linked to the sweetener. Xylitol can kill a dog in just 10 to 60 minutes, or symptoms may occur up to 24 hours after ingestion. The FDA urges dog owners to avoid any products containing xylitol and to seek immediate emergency veterinary care if a dog swallows anything containing xylitol. Xylitol is used in sugarless gums, mints, sugar-free desserts such as skinny ice cream, baked goods such as cakes, muffins, or pies that may be labeled as safe for diabetics, as well as some peanut butter and other nut butters. It's also in some toothpastes, chewable vitamins and supplements, mouthwash, cough syrup, and certain over-the-counter medications. While xylitol is considered safe for humans, it is quickly absorbed into the bloodstream of dogs as well as ferrets, triggering a potentially fatal release of insulin from the pancreas. Always check labels to be sure there is no xylitol before giving any human food products to your pets, especially in products advertised as sugar-free or low in sugar. It's spelled XYLITOL. Keep all products with xylitol out of pets' reach, and remember that pets may paw through a purse or backpack to find treats or pull items left too close to the edge of a countertop. If your dog accidentally consumes even a small amount of a product with xylitol, call your veterinarian or poison control center immediately and report any adverse reactions to the FDA. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is Miriam Raftery with the weather report. A high-pressure system moving into our region is bringing monsoonal moisture capable of producing thunderstorms, heavy downpours, high winds, and flash floods from Sunday, July 21st through at least Wednesday. The storms are mainly expected to impact our mountain and desert regions, and fog is also forecast. So if you're on the roads, please use caution.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. And our very special guest today is Krista Powers with the Mount Helix Park Foundation, and she is here today to talk about their big event of the year coming up on August 10th, the Heart of Mount Helix event. We're also going to hear a little bit about the history of Mount Helix and some of the other amazing things that are going on nowadays at the park. Krista, welcome to the show.
Hi, Miriam. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure. I live in the Mount Helix area myself, and I've enjoyed a lot of the great events up there, so it's a pleasure to have you here. So for people who may not be familiar, can you start by telling us a little bit about the history of Mount Helix and the park on top?
Sure, I would love to. It's an absolutely fascinating history. Basically, people have been gathering up on the top of the mountain since late 1800s. Another thing in 1917, roughly, the Ad and Marketing Club back then started an Easter sunrise service up at the top. And then fast forward that into the park that we now have that came about because the mother of the Yaki family used to love to come up there, but always remarked that she wished that there was a more comfortable place to sit. And so out of that came her children creating the beautiful outdoor nature stone amphitheater and the 35-foot memorial cross that sits at about a little over 1,300 feet, as well as the historic rock wall that you can see as you drive all along Mount Helix Drive. And the amphitheater sits about, I believe we can fit almost 2,000 guests in there, which is really exciting.
It's really a dramatic location. I've been up there for summer theater in past years when they did that there. You have the 360-degree views, so you can watch the sunset and the stars coming up all over and the city lights. It's really a wonderful setting. Bit of history on the cross itself, by the way. There was actually a lawsuit at one time that went all the way to the Supreme Court, and as a result of that, if I'm remembering correctly, the city of La Mesa deeded over the land. And thus, the private foundation now runs that to avoid separation of church and state issues.
Yeah, and I remember being in high school in the 90s and going with my mom to get petitions signed to save the cross and doing candlelight walks up to the top of the cross. And because I grew up playing at that park, and so it was a very important part of my life. And then now my two young boys get to play in the park. So yeah, because the separation of church and state, I mean, the family originally thought that they were giving this beautiful gift to the county. And unfortunately, because the county has so many responsibilities, it was kind of a little bit of an afterthought for them.
At one point, there was a Supreme Court decision that said you can't have crosses on public land.
I think that actually came out of the Mount Soledad case.
And so the land wound up being transferred from a local government entity to the Mount Helix Park Foundation, and they've been improving it and coming up with new things there ever since. So Krista, fast forward a little bit. Tell us about how this has evolved through the years.
So basically in 1999, the foundation was formed to privatize the land and be able to save the park. And with that, we started restoring it. One of our major initiatives that we've been involved with is native habitat restoration. So it's really been an amazing transition to see like all the wildlife that's up at the park now. And we're in full bloom right now with butterflies, bees, birds, and just, I feel like I'm Snow White when I'm walking around the park, basically. It's incredible.
Wonderful. That's just great news. Now tell us about some of the events that are held up there each year.
Yes. So it's actually, the park is still governed by the Yawkey Family Trust as originally intended.
So when the Yawkey family donated it, I understand that there was a commitment to provide certain events open to the community.
Yes. So we provide a annual Easter sunrise service every single year, and it's been officially going on under the park since 1925 was when the amphitheater was actually built. But as I mentioned earlier, the Ag Club had actually started in 1917. But we continue to operate that service every single year. And a variety of local churches in the area come together to help produce the event for the community. So it's a really special, this year we had about 1,500 people. And it's just amazing to get there in the morning when it's dark. And then it seems to happen every single year that the clouds spread and the rays shine through right as the music for the service starts. It's really just awe-inspiring.
Very interesting. Yeah, I've been to that. Now, that's just one day out of the year, but what about the other 364 days a year for those who may just have heard of the sunrise service and not everything else?
Right. We do quite a few things, and we're starting to also look to a few more community events. And some of our other ones are, we have a great, fantastic Christmas caroling event, complete with Santa Claus, a great sing-along for everyone. We have the Old Town Trolley, full of Christmas lights, bringing people up the mountain. And we serve hot cocoa and some other refreshments for guests. This year, we're looking at to evolving it even a little bit further and starting it earlier and making it more, if you've ever been to some of the Christmas markets in Europe, kind of a little bit more of that flavor.
Oh, wow.
Obviously, we don't quite have the real estate or the flat ground to be able to fully do it, but we will try our best.
And now, there's classes and things up there, too.
There sure are. We have a lovely lady who does a kids' art camp. We have a community lecture that we do twice a year, and it's a nature lecture. We just held one, and it was gardening for pollinators. And so we got Dictionary Hill expert to come and give a talk, and then walk along our Yawkey Trail and point out all the different native plants and what types of butterflies and pollinators that they might attract, so that people could then go and plant them in their own yard. We hope to create this pollinator pathway throughout San Diego.
Wonderful.
Up to Mount Helix, and especially here in our local East County area, because it's not just about having these pockets of native plants. You kind of have to create a pathway for them to travel on.
Right. Connectivity. And all of this, listeners, is part of the Mount Helix Park Foundation's commitment as a nonprofit to give back to the community with so many of these wonderful things. Now, you also do yoga classes.
We do yoga classes every Monday through Friday. They start at 9 a.m. And then we also have an astronomy night that will be coming up in September. We have some weddings and some other events that happen throughout the year.
In past years, too, it varies, of course, from year to year. But some years, there's been summer theater up there, not this particular summer. There have been concerts. Mm-hmm. The acoustics are amazing. I remember going to a piano concert up there one year. Yeah. It's just a wonderful experience.
And then we also have our Halloween Harvest Festival that'll be coming up. It's always the Saturday before Halloween. And we have a live band, a kids' costume parade, a bunch of vendors that are doing fun activities for children. And it's really fun.
Now, the biggest event of the year is the Heart of Mount Helix event, which happens every summer, and it is, I understand, the event that helps fund so many of these other community activities. So tell us when that's going to take place this year.
Yes, so our 12th annual Heart of Mount Helix event is happening on August 10th this year. And it's slowly evolved over the years, and now it's basically this year turned into a wonderful food and wine festival for East County and all the community that wants to come support us.
It sounds like fun. So you can look at art. Can people buy art if they want to?
People can purchase art. We have various local artists. It's very important to us that we do support the artists of East County. And that was kind of the foundation originally of the event as well mm-hmm. as the park. We also have wonderful, we have about 18 restaurants from out here in East County that will be nice. Sampling. We have a couple wineries and breweries and distilleries that will all be providing samples to the people at the Food and Wine Festival.
Yeah, it just seems to get bigger and better every year. Speaking as a Mount Helix resident myself, now this isn't just any food and wine festival. There's a lot more to it than that. Give us a little bit of an idea of what the actual experience is like when you first arrive. First of all, I understand there's a new shuttle this year, so if people are worried about parking, that's no longer an issue. When you walk in the entrance, what do you see?
Well, yeah, I'm glad that you touched on the shuttle because that is really important so that people know where to park. So this year, we're just doing two parking locations. Grossmont High School will be the main parking, and I recommend most people park there because you're guaranteed to find a spot. The other spot that people know about is at Fire Station 21. However, that fills up almost immediately. The other difference this year is that people will actually be checking in for the event when they park. And they'll be getting their wristband there. And then they'll be hopping on the Old Town Trolley that everybody has so much fun with. And they're a great partner of ours. And nice. So they come up the mountain. And right away, they guest walk into a living art experience. So there'll be live artists there painting. There will be some food and beverage samplings that guests can kind of walk around. Our raffle will be there, and then they can continue up the side road. There will be a couple more little treats that are new this year up that road. And then once they get up to Sunset Peak, where they have the 360-degree view around the cross, we have more wine this year, more beer, a couple more restaurants, and then there'll be another live band up there.
And you can do Dancing Under the Stars.
Yeah, so the first half of the event is from 5 to 7, and that's the sampling event. And then at about 7-ish, guests usually continue on down into the main Nature Park Theater to where the live action really starts happening with our live auction. We have a cooking demonstration happening. So after live auction, we have a new VIP experience this year with lounge furniture. And our guests in the VIP area will actually get their samplings continued until 10 p.m. So that's a lot of fun for them. And then the Good Mojo Band goes on live at about 8 o'clock-ish.
Very good. Well, it sounds like an exciting event coming up. Will there also be a silent auction or any prize drawings this year?
Yeah, we will have a really fun high-value raffle. So we've kind of shrunken down a couple of things, and basically the high-value raffles, just a bigger basket with more in it, and people will be able to buy raffle tickets and put those in front of whatever they would like to go home with.
That's nice.
Yeah. And we're continuing again with our live auction mm-hmm. that I know everybody loves because we have all kinds of things from stays in Coronado, Palm Springs, Las Vegas.
There you go. So if you need a vacation, here's where you can get one.
Yeah. Dinner at the Rotating Home, private dinner at Mount Helix Park.
Oh yeah. That's the roundhouse on
yes.
Mount Helix.
Yes.
Once. I didn't know. That's one of the prizes.
Yeah. And then our raffle also has a helicopter ride in it and a Taste of La Mesa and some other fun stuff. So we have several different entertainers that are coming. And I know for a fact right now we have confirmed that Allie Younker will be involved. And she has a gorgeous, beautiful voice and plays guitar. And then the Tradesmen will be playing Up by the Cross and their local East County band and big supporters of the park as well. And then the evening will be capped off with a well-known East County band called Good Mojo. And they play a lot of, everything from Adele, Aretha Franklin, up through some more modern top 40 stuff.
Now, if people want tickets or they want to learn more about the Heart of Mount Helix event coming up on August 10th, where can they go?
They can go to Mount MT Helix, H-E-L-I-X, Park, P-A-R-K.org.
Very good. Krista, I'm going to let you have the last word today. Is there anything else you'd like our listeners to know about the Mount Helix Park Foundation or the Heart of Mount Helix event coming up?
there are a lot of people who do not realize that we really don't receive any funding from the city or the county. So we rely 100% on our donors and our volunteers. And we have some fun stuff. If you go to the website, we do a monthly first Saturday of every month, Volunteer in the Park Day.
Nice.
So people can come up, get involved, meet their friends in the community. We also have kind of a monthly third Wednesday of every month gathering at Helix Brewing. And that's just volunteers and their friends. And it's just a fun camaraderie gathering. And so, yeah, we really survive off of our donors and our volunteers. So please come volunteer at the park, stop by our office, say hi for a cup of coffee. We're there.
Very good. Well, I want to thank you so much, Krista, for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio 89.1 FM, Descansa.
Thank you so much for having me today. I appreciate it.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
East County Magazine's reporting on the West Fire in Alpine last year has received an award from the Society of Professional Journalists San Diego Chapter. The series, written by our editor Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show, won a third-place prize in the Daily Reporting and Writing Series category. East County Magazine's Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service first reported on the West Fire in Alpine just 6 minutes after the devastating wildfire began, before dozens of homes were burned, providing critical time for families to evacuate. You can sign up to receive free East County Wildfire and Emergency Alerts or support our reporting in the public interest at eastcountymagazine.org. East County Magazine's reporting on the West Fire in Alpine last year has received an award from the Society of Professional Journalists San Diego Chapter. The series, written by our editor Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show, won a third-place prize in the Daily Reporting and Writing Series category. East County Magazine's Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service first reported on the West Fire in Alpine just 6 minutes after the devastating wildfire began, before dozens of homes were burned, providing critical time for families to evacuate. You can sign up to receive free East County Wildfire and Emergency Alerts or support our reporting in the public interest at eastcountymagazine.org.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
For the first time in over 100 years, the House of Representatives has voted to condemn the actions of a president. Congressional members voted 240 to 187 to formally condemn President Donald Trump's posts on Twitter attacking four minority congresswomen as racist. The action came in response to Trump slamming the four congresswomen of color for criticizing his administration, then stating that they should go back to the countries they came from. However, three of the four women are U.S. citizens who were born in the USA. Trump said the Democratic congresswomen, quote, originally came from countries whose governments are a complete and total catastrophe, the worst, most corrupt and inept anywhere in the world. Then he added, why don't they go back and help fix the totally broken and crime-infested places from which they came? You can't leave fast enough. He later doubled down, stating that the women hate America. The four Democratic congresswomen attacked in the president's tweets are Representatives Rashida Tlaib of Michigan, Ilhan Omar of Minnesota, Ayanna Pressley of Massachusetts, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York. Omar is a Muslim born in Somalia and is a naturalized citizen. The women have made at times controversial remarks, such as Ocasio-Cortez calling migrant detention centers concentration camps, or Omar's comments on Israel and Palestine. But even some Republican members of Congress told media that Congress should respect the rights of its members to speak out, even when members disagree. The resolution was introduced by Congressman Tom Malinowski, a New Jersey Democrat who was born in Poland. Many of the congressional co-sponsors were also born overseas. The resolution states in part that immigrants and their descendants have made America stronger, then strongly condemns President Donald Trump's, quote, racist comments that have legitimized and increased fear and hatred of new Americans and people of color. Speaker Nancy Pelosi, in her testimony supporting the resolution, told of attending Catholic Mass on Sunday in a Hispanic church and hearing a sermon on the Good Samaritan who helped foreigners shortly before Trump issued his blistering tweets. She quotes supporting immigrants by presidents from our founding fathers to Ronald Reagan, then urged her colleagues to unanimously pass the resolution.
I went to Spanish Mass this weekend and saw the dignity of those families, the beauty of the children, and the fear that the president had struck in their hearts as we were listening to the gospel of the Good Samaritan to show mercy and love thy neighbor as thyself. That very same day, unfortunately, there were those who were not informed by that gospel. And so here we are later in that day. It was stunning to hear the words that were used, go home, to some of our colleagues. The same words that were used to so many people in our country, whether because they weren't born here or because they didn't look like some others here. Go home. As annoyed and as insulted as we all should be about the president saying that about our colleagues, it's also not showing mercy for him to say that about so many people in our country as he wants to split up families. So I thank Mr. Malinowski and Mr. Raskin for the opportunity to speak to the statements that the president made later in the day of the gospel of the Good Samaritan. Mr. Malinowski was born abroad, Mr. Raskin, for his firm leadership in advancing this important resolution. The House, hopefully, has come together, standing as one, to denounce the White House's xenophobic attacks on our members, on our people, and to defend the values of America. And what is America? America is many things, a land of a great constitution which is under threat, a beautiful land that God has given us which is being degraded, values that we share that are being undermined. But America is also a nation largely, but not totally, largely of immigrants. As this resolution so beautifully states, the founders conceived America as a haven for refuge, for people fleeing from religious and political persecution. And Thomas Jefferson, Alexander Hamilton, James Madison, having opposite views on other subjects, all emphasized that the nation gained as it attracted new people in search of freedom and livelihood for their families. The resolution quotes our most iconic presidents, who all recognize that immigrants are the constant reinvigoration of America, of hope, determination, optimism, and courage to make the future better. Those are American values. Those are American traits, hope, optimism, courage. And many of these immigrants, when they come here with those values and those traits, make America more American. Franklin Roosevelt said, "Remember always that all of us, and you and I especially, are descendants from immigrants." President John F. Kennedy, who wrote that the contribution of immigrants can be seen in every aspect of our national life. And President Ronald Reagan, who he said it so beautifully in his last speech as President of the United States, which is quoted in this resolution, who said, "If we ever close the door to new Americans, our leadership in the world would soon be lost." Yet the president's comments about our colleagues this weekend show that he does not share those American values. These comments from the White House are disgraceful and disgusting, and these comments are racist. How shameful to hear him continue to defend those offensive words words that we have all heard him repeat, not only about our members, but about countless others. Our caucus will continue to forcefully respond to those attacks on our members, which reflect a fundamental disrespect for the beautiful diversity of America. There is no place anywhere for the president's words, which are not only divisive, but dangerous, and have legitimized and increased fear and hatred of new Americans and people of color. It's so sad because you would think that there would be a given that we would universally in this body just say, of course, of course. And there's no excuse for any response to those words but a swift and strong unified condemnation. Every single member of this institution, Democratic and Republican, should join us in condemning the president's racist tweets. To do anything less would be a shocking rejection of our values and a shameful abdication of our oath of office to protect the American people.
Her call for the vote was interrupted by Republican Doug Collins of Georgia, who demanded that her remarks be stricken from the record for violating House decorum. After a contentious session, the remarks remained on the record and the measure passed with only 4 Republicans and 1 independent joined with Democrats to vote for the resolution. No similar measure will be introduced in the Senate, where Senate President Pro Tem Mitch McConnell, a Republican from Kentucky, stated tersely after today's vote that the president is no racist. Multiple major media outlets such as CBS News termed the tweets racist in headlines. But Trump insists his tweets were not racist in a tweet before the vote, which he called a Democratic con game, adding, "Republicans should not show weakness and fall into their trap." At the White House, after the vote, the president said again of the 4 American congresswomen of color, they can leave. The tweets are only the latest in a long string of actions by the president that many have characterized as racist, including his comments calling Mexicans rapists and murderers, and his statements that there were good people on both sides at a neo-Nazi rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, at which a protester was killed by a white supremacist who rammed his vehicle into a crowd. The driver was later convicted of murder. Congress has adopted resolutions to condemn actions of a president only twice before in American history. In 1860, President James Buchanan was admonished for steering contracts based on political party. The Senate adopted a resolution condemning President Andrew Jackson for withholding documents in 1834, though that action was later expunged when Jackson's political party regained control of the Senate. All other resolutions to condemn or censure a president have failed. However, 2 presidents, Andrew Johnson and Bill Clinton, were impeached by the House, but both were acquitted by the Senate. Richard Nixon, facing the likely prospect of impeachment over the Watergate scandal, chose to resign the presidency. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Friday, July the 19th, 2019. I'm Mike Clifford. Chats of a different sort greeted Representative Omar upon her return home to Minnesota. Also on our Friday rundown, a new report says gunshot survivors need more outreach support, plus sharing climate change perspectives in Charlotte. Now our top story, Representative Ilhan Omar returned to Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport Thursday to cheers. CBS News reports that comes just one day after a crowd at President Trump's rally chanted, "Send her back," when he singled the freshman Democrat out for criticism. Omar then held a previously scheduled town hall on Medicare on Thursday night with Representative Jaipal of Washington. CBS notes Omar, a Somali refugee who became a naturalized American citizen, is the only one of 4 women who was not born in the U.S. that Mr. Trump singled out, falsely claiming she blamed the U.S. for terrorist attacks. The predominantly white North Carolina rally crowd responded with those chants of "send her back." A Michigan group that advocates for Muslims is filing a civil rights complaint today against Tim Hortons restaurants, claiming a worker there refused to serve a Muslim American couple and told them, quote, to go back to your own country. Suzanne Potter has our report.
At a news conference today, the Council on American Islamic Relations Michigan chapter plans to release video from the incident, which it says took place at a Tim Hortons restaurant in Ypsilanti on June 28th. Amy Ducore, a staff attorney for CARE, says things went downhill when the couple said their coffee order was wrong and asked for a replacement or a refund.
The clerk at Tim Hortons screamed at them the B word and then said, go back to your own country. And she like turned to the clerk and she said, this is my country. I was born in Lansing, Michigan. You can't say that to me. I belong here. And the clerk was like, oh, do you? Do you really? You don't belong here.
The couple, Alaa Corder and her husband, Amur Daimini, are U.S. citizens living in Ann Arbor. They said the clerk, who appears to be an African-American woman, seemed to be angered by his accent and her head covering. They say they left a message on the Canadian-based restaurant chain's complaint line, but have not heard back. The company did not immediately respond to a request for comment.
Meantime, the Michigan Department of Civil Rights will investigate whether Tim Hortons unlawfully denied service at a public accommodation based on religion or national origin. Survivors of firearm violence in states like Maryland and their families are not getting the support they need to cope with their recovery and trauma. That's according to a new report.
Amnesty International says a combination of too much paperwork and not enough outreach keeps people from accessing a Maryland program to help gunshot victims. In 2017, the report says the most common reason for denying an application for victim compensation across all states was incomplete information on paperwork. Jasmeet Sidhu, research manager at Amnesty International, says 24% of denials were for this reason.
The paperwork surrounding applying to these funds, it's hard to kind of navigate the system. And for people who don't have support or don't have access to some of that paperwork, it can be just kind of overwhelming.
The research surveyed survivors in cities with high rates of gun violence in Maryland, Florida, and Louisiana. The report says there were more than 700 firearm-related deaths in Maryland in 2017, but only 199 victim compensation applications, and of those, just 54 were approved. This is Diane Bernard reporting.
There are concerns that a last-minute addition to the Ohio new state biennial budget could threaten democracy.
Governor Mike DeWine signed House Bill 166 on Thursday, which includes a provision to reduce the minimum number of workers at multi-precinct polling locations on Election Day. Mike Brickner, with advocacy group All Voting is Local, contends the need for poll workers is more crucial than ever, as many counties will transition to new voting machines over the next year.
It's very frustrating in that we know that this could become a perfect storm for problems at the polls in 2020. The presidential election is going to have a higher turnout than gubernatorial elections, but we even saw in 2018 record turnout.
Supporters of reducing the number of poll workers point out that Ohio voters are now allowed to use any line in multi-precinct polling locations, so the process is smoother. Mary Sherman reporting. This story was produced in association with Media in the Public Interest and funded in part by the George Gunn Foundation.
And finally, Nadia Ramlagan tells us storms, hurricanes, and flooding have cost cities around the country billions of dollars. Today in Charlotte, business leaders and GOP Congressman Patrick McHenry are meeting to talk about how climate change is impacting the finance and the business community.
Experts say real estate, infrastructure, and electric utility sectors are especially vulnerable to rising sea levels, record high temperatures, and increasing extreme weather events. Jerry Taylor, who leads the Niskanen Center, says CEOs and shareholders realize what's at stake.
About half of the venture capital in the world today is now directed by investors who are demanding climate action. A great majority of the U.S. corporate community is likewise interested in acting to head off the costs associated with climate change.
Around 50 North Carolina business leaders are participating in today's discussion. The event was organized by the Nature Conservancy in North Carolina. I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for wrapping up your week with Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Miriam Raftery with the weather report. A high-pressure system moving into our region is bringing monsoonal moisture capable of producing thunderstorms, heavy downpours, high winds, and flash floods from Sunday, July 21st through at least Wednesday. The storms are mainly expected to impact our mountain and desert regions, and fog is also forecast. So if you're on the roads, please use caution.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Gerald Stevenson with the Green Scene Report. U.S. beekeepers lost over 40% of their honeybee colonies for the year ending April 2019, according to the latest survey by the Bee Informed Partnership, a nonprofit led by the University of Maryland. That continues a national decline in recent years that has alarmed scientists, with causes ranging from pesticides to climate change to colony collapse disorder of unknown causes. But in San Diego, where the county recently passed an ordinance to encourage beekeeping, the numbers are on the rise. Now, after heavy winter rains caused wildfires to blossom across our region, honeybees are swarming in record numbers to collect pollen used for honey production, the San Diego Union-Tribune reports. Mark Kukuchek, president of the San Diego Beekeeping Society, says it's been a wonderful year for the bees, with plenty of flowers as well as ideal weather conditions. That's led to bee populations increasing, and when hives get overcrowded, half the colony will take off in a swarm seeking a new home along with a queen bee, leaving a young queen behind in the old colony. If you spot a swarm or clump of bees hanging on a tree limb, it's most likely only temporary, and they will move on in a few days. But if bees invade your attic or enter the home through a chimney, you can call a beekeeping service to save the bees and relocate them. If you spot a swarm or clump of bees hanging on a tree limb, it's most likely only temporary, and they will move on in a few days. But if bees invade your attic or enter the home through a chimney, you can call a beekeeping service to save the bees and relocate them. A swarm in an attic can cause property damage, even collapsing a ceiling under the weight of massive honeycombs. If bees form honeycombs inside walls, honey can seep into interior walls and living areas, so removal is necessary. But local beekeepers told the Union Tribune that they have been overwhelmed with calls from property owners asking help to remove swarms from attics, sheds, chimneys, and other locations this spring, so you may find a waiting list when you call. What about the fear of Africanized bees? Local bee experts say the buzz is mostly overblown. According to Kukuchek, around 80% of local bees are the result of mating between honeybees and African bees, which has toned down the aggressiveness of the African bees somewhat. It's also brought some benefits, including faster honey production. But there can be occasional problems. A huge hive in Escondido this spring weighed an estimated 100 pounds. A beekeeper called to relocate the swarm wound up having to kill many of them after they became aggressive and stung bystanders during the removal process. If you see a swarm in an open area, stay calm and don't run. Most likely, the bees will leave you alone and move on to a new location on their own, the San Diego Fire Department advises. The San Diego Beekeeping Society provides a list of bee removal services, as well as educational materials and classes if you're interested in learning how to become a beekeeper and help save these important pollinators.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.